And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean. Set me up on my pony, on my boat.
Our next guest on Downtown is an Emmy, Tony, and Golden Globe Award winner. Has starred for 7 seasons on Homeland. You know him from his work in The Princess Bride, on stage as well. And he's about to embark on a national tour performing music from his recent diary albums, including a stop at the Criterion Theater in Bar Harbor on Sunday afternoon, November 3rd. We are thrilled to be joined here on Downtown by Mandy Patinkin.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're looking forward to the show at the beautiful Criterion Theater in Bar Harbor on November 3rd. You're headed out on a tour starting in a couple of weeks. So what is it that you like most about performing for a live audience?
Everything about it. It's immediate. It happens right at that moment. We all come into that space having our lives that day that are personal and private, and also public, being what we all share that happened in our country and the world at large. And so you get to sing these songs. Some are familiar, some are not familiar to people, but you might have sung some of these songs 100 times or 1,000,000 times, but never that day, with what's happened in your life that day and everyone else's life in that room that day. Some things that we've all shared, and it echoes through all of us as we listen. And the comfort of being with a group of people who are also interested in listening to these ideas that these songwriters have written that give me comfort, that I connect with, and that I'm not alone, that I'm with other people that also like these ideas and connect as well. And that, it's nice not to feel alone.
You'll be doing songs from your recent albums. The diary albums are so wonderful, and I understand for you it was a very different way of recording. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I'd basically done show tunes for 30-some years. Then my piano player, Paul Ford, retired. And then my Homeland shooting schedule got really intense. And so I kind of, you know, pulled away from the music stuff for about 2 or 3 years. And then I was missing it so much, I thought it was starving to death, and I realized I was missing the music. So my friend Bob Hurwitz, who also started None Such Records, he said, I have somebody I want you to meet named Thomas Bartlett. He's a very gifted young musician, producer, engineer, the whole thing. He's a genius. And I meet Thomas, and Thomas, after our meeting, sends me on Christmas Eve 2017 300 songs to listen to. Now, Thomas does not know any, not one single show tune. He has no knowledge of them, but he is a singer-songwriter genius, and everybody wants to work with him. So he sends me 300 songs to listen to. I lock myself in a room on Christmas Eve, and I listen, and I chose 28 of them. We then go in the studio, and we start pressing the record button, and I said, I want to make a diary, a journal, of whatever we're working on today. And whenever we have 10 or 11 songs, we'll just put it out. We're not going to have some album concept or whatever, just like what we're working on right now. So we did that, and sometimes it's the very first take. Sometimes we work it because we're finding something. And then we put out 3 diaries in 2018, one, and digitally. So they're just out there. Sometimes it's like a tree falling in a forest. No one hears it because it's not the normal pattern of a proper CD and a tour and press, et cetera. And so, we made 3 of these diaries so far, each with 10 or 11 plus songs, and one called January 2018, one called April, May 2018, one called December 2018. And then Nunsa said, let's put out a record. I said, okay. And I'm making all these songs, and at the same time, I was saying, I want to do this stuff live, publicly, for my audiences. And I got to figure out how to do it. And I made a test. And I mixed it with some show tunes, but it's much heavier on the new singer-songwriter material. So we put out a new album that'll come out very soon, October 25th, which is about 10 songs from the diaries and one song from something else that I'd done. And then that was appropriate. We put it together in a certain way that expressed what I wanted. And then we tried the tour out, which I did in New York and then in Sydney Opera House in Australia, Melbourne Opera House, Brisbane Opera House, all Australia, and Hawaii and San Fran in November before I left for 9 months to shoot the final season of Homeland. And that was a very great experience. I loved it, but I wanted to make some adjustments. We've made those adjustments since then. And now we're ready for the new tour, which begins October 30th.
The album includes one of my favorite songs, a great Lyle Lovett tune, If I Had a Boat. Is that a song that was new to you?
Absolutely. That was the song, one of the 300 that Thomas brought me.
You also do one of your original compositions, Raggedy Ann.
Raggedy Ann on the record, on the new album, one of that song is on that. In the concert that we're doing, I don't do Raggedy Ann, but I do another song that I wrote called Buckingham.
And you also do children and art, and good advice for all of us in there, a little less thinking and a little more feeling. You are such a great interpreter of Stephen Sondheim. What is it about his work that you relate to so well?
Well, I think he's the Shakespeare of our time. I think that if I could write, and I'm trying, but I'm not a great writer. I'm just somebody who's having fun doing it and trying it more and more. But Stephen writes what I would write if I could write. And really, what I think Stephen's about is I think he has a dark nature, but he writes to find the light. And he doesn't give up, and he never quits till he reaches for the light. And I also, at times, have a dark nature. And my life has been about finding the light as well. So it's a perfect, I connect with everything he writes. And it is, God bless him. I'm so grateful that his music exists for all time. And on top of that, I'm a friend of his and get to know him. And I've gotten to work with him on occasions. And I just, I always wondered as a young actor, God, what was it like to know Shakespeare being in that company? Well, I know. Now I know.
We're talking with Mandy Patinkin on Downtown. You've had so much success on stage and film and television. I was reading something recently that said that after Yentl, you became the thinking woman's sex symbol. I would put that on a business card if it were me.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what that means.
Of course, everybody, I'm sure, wants to ask you about The Princess Bride. We will be no exception here. Was there any inkling at the time that this would have the kind of legs, the kind of traction it's had to really become a classic?
Oh, I have no idea. Rob Reiner asked me to read the script. He said, what part would you like to play? I said, I'd like to play this part. And he said, okay, let me just see how everything else comes down in the casting, make sure everybody matches. And I got the part that I wanted. And pardon me. And Bill Goldman, William Goldman, wrote down, the first description of Inigo Montoya was the world's greatest sword fighter. So I knew my job was to become a really good sword fighter. So I set about that task and just did the work like I do any play or anything else. Same thing. I loved it. The cast, the people, everybody were so wonderful. I felt I should have paid them. They shouldn't have paid me. It was so much fun. And I had no idea what would be after that. It was just a job, like all jobs, but a really wonderful job, a job I love. And then the movie comes out, and it doesn't do well. It doesn't do well at all. And then somehow it starts catching on with college students, not long after, but not immediately, but, within, a few years or something. And then it becomes this cult thing in colleges and goes from generation to generation. And before you know it, kids and their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren have all seen it. And just like you asking me about it right now, I can never get over that I'm the guy you're talking about that got to be in the movie, one of the guys. It's a dream that came true before I had time to dream it.
In that film, you shared a lot of screen time with Andre. Was it difficult with your background as an experienced stage actor and him having no real acting background to create the chemistry that those two characters required for the film?
No, he is truly the definition of the gentle giant. He will live with me forever. He was the kindest man I'd ever known. He had great pain, physical pain from this disease, which, where all your organs keep growing past normal point. And in spite of that pain, he pressed on every day. We loved him so much. Whatever he needed, we were there to support him with. And, And he was just, he was like being with a, just a saint. He was one of, you know, just one of the gifts to this world. He was really beautiful. And he loved doing this movie. I saw a picture of him when he was 21 years old, leaning on a car on a beach in a small French town. And he told me that, I mean, very few people lived in this town. One of them was Samuel Beckett. And Samuel Beckett took him to work, took him to school often, and, you know, drove him to school. And this was before the giant disease kicked in. He just looked like a beautiful, young, tall guy, and but not crazy tall. And then I was told after the movie years later that he always loved that, that he would once he started wrestling, somebody said to me he'd like never been more than 2 days without being on the road wrestling on the circuit. And so the longest time he was anywhere for a static period of time was when we made the movie for 4+ months. And then I heard that he loved it so that he carried a copy of the movie with him wherever he went, because it just meant the world to him. Mm-hmm.
Mandy Patinkin with us here on Downtown. You left Criminal Minds and have talked about the reasons behind that. Were you surprised after that to have the opportunity to return to television in Homeland?
I was so happy that Homeland came along with the people that were involved in it. It was just the perfect fit for me, and it was just an extraordinary experience on endless levels. And one of the great gifts was that I've done several interviews today, so if I'm repeating myself, shut me up right away. But we were in Berlin shooting the fourth season. Did I tell you this yet?
No.
Okay. We were in Berlin shooting the fourth season, and it was at the moment when and the first episode was about, it took place in a Syrian refugee camp, because Homeland would often track current events. And it was at the exact same moment that 125,000 refugees were trying to get to safety and find refuge and rescue and a new beginning, getting across the Balkan route, trying to get to Germany at that time specifically. And I remember seeing these images and immediately thinking, oh, my God, that's my ancestors. Those are my family. Mm. And I want to be with them. But I had this job to do for 6.5 months to film this fictional world while the real world was burning, and these people, you know, were so desperate. And the moment we finished the last shot, I literally drove from the set to the airport, flew to Lesbos, Greece, and within, you know, a short time, one of the small boats came up on shore, and a baby was put in my arms, and we thought that she'd expired. She'd ended up having an epileptic attack, but because I was working with the International Rescue Committee, we got her immediate medical care and got the family put together and got them on the way to Germany. And then so much tragedy has happened since in March 2016, the EU closed their doors to refugees. This new administration came in and dropped the quota down from 85 in the previous administration to 45. And this year they just announced 18. And it's a crime against humanity. You know, when all the people that are called Americans needed to come here and come for whatever reason, past Americans welcomed them. And it is our duty to our fellow human beings. And so the privilege that Homeland had given me, which was a platform, and the moment that just appeared, which, you know, just caught my you know, I connected to, is one of the, you know, that I try to keep focus and awareness on these people's lives, where so many, it's a global problem right now, led by the United States, I might add, where so many nations are turning their backs on people in such dire need. We mustn't do that. We can all work together and help, first of all, to stop the conflict, and then find ways to rescue these people. Between conflict and climate change, this is a growing business, not a diminishing one. And we have to. And my grandpa Max used to have a saying in Yiddish, which means the wheel is always turning. So if you find yourself on top at some given moment, you know, just know that that wheel turns and one day you'll be on the bottom. And it's the classic story. If somebody knocks on your door and you don't open it and welcome them and you're not there for them, one day you may knock on someone's door. And if you want them to open that door and help you or your loved one, behave like a human being.
A great message indeed, Mandy. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time this afternoon. Thank you for being with us, and we look forward to the show in Bar Harbor in a couple of weeks.
Please ask your folks to come. I can't wait to do it, and I want everybody to come to see it. Thanks.
How great was he? Mandy Patinkin. We actually recorded that yesterday right before the show, but well, he was terrific.
And every answer seemed to have so much thought behind it. I mean, and as he admitted to us, it was a day of interviews for him. So it would have been very easy for him to just sort of rubber stamp stuff and move along. But you could tell that's not what he was doing.
Yeah. And he's a pro. And you can see it in the characters he plays as well. But that was cool. Again, November 3rd, it's a Sunday afternoon show, 3 p.m. down at the Criterion in Bar Harbor. If you haven't been there, it's a beautiful place to see a show. You were down there for the Paula Poundstone concert, right?
Yes, I was. It is a wonderful place for a show. They've done a great job of that theater, not just restoring it, but I think it was very well kept for many years as well. So it's a great place to see a show.
Info at CriterionTheater.org for more information to see Mandy Patinkin in concert on November 3rd.